Hello and welcome to the Majlis. This is Mohammed Tahir, director of the Turkmen Service at Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty. Lately, Turkmenistan is often on the headlines and not for good reasons. Despite having the fifth largest energy reserves, the economy is in decline. As the economy is in decline, the restrictions are on the rise. Money exchange centers stopped trading foreign currency, severely harming import and export. Citizens are asked to pay for utilities, which once was famously free in Turkmenistan. And lately, the current president is increasingly seen following the path of his predecessor, with the suspected intention to stick to power as long as he can. Similarly, as personality cult on the rise, so does the intolerance against any criticism of the government. Today, in the Majlis, the Central Asian podcast, we intend to discuss how Turkmenistan came to this point and where it is heading. To discuss the subject, I have Peter Leonard, the Central Asian editor at EurasiaNet, Ruslan Matif, editor at Alternative Turkmenistan News Portal, Bruce Panier, editor of Kishlak Awazi, Central Asia blog at Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty. Gentlemen, welcome to the Majlis.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Ruslan, first of all, let's do a little reality check. Obviously, we have a lot to talk about economy, social challenge, and what connection it might have to the recent political decisions, especially the presidential terms. But let's do first a little reality check here. Compared to only 5 years ago, Ruslan, what has changed? How much it has changed in Turkmenistan in terms of economy and social landscape of the country?
In fact, I shouldn't be actually taking 5 years, but maybe even a year gives us already a lot of room for discussion here. Many things have changed, especially in the last year. That applies to the economy, that applies to the social life, that applies to the freedoms of the people inside the country. In some of the cases, unfortunately, these changes are not positive. You mentioned rightly that the economy is doing bad at the moment, and it could be the echo of the world stagnation, but which touched upon Turkmenistan as well. But Turkmenistan has also its own separate, let's say, financial issues with the construction of all the buildings for the Asian Games to be held in 2017, and with the drop of prices for energy resources. So, within the last few months, actually, the country was faced with a significant lack of hard currency, American dollars in particular. There were several restrictions for imposed on purchasing the foreign currency until the government completely banned selling dollars to citizens. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Peter, you are more Central Asian than British. What kind of a signal are you getting from Turkmenistan lately in terms of economy? And we are also talking about increasing repression in the country. What is your reading of the local situation there?
When it comes to Turkmenistan, I think it's always important to try and look at it from both ends. And what I mean by that, I think, is that from the outside, we tend to look more at the kind of external inputs and look at the falling price for energy resources and how that's having a very detrimental impact on the revenues for Turkmenistan. But I think when you look at it from the ground up, the situation, in fact, may be a little bit divorced, actually, from energy revenues. This is my sense, in as much as we don't really know where a lot of this money is ending up anyway. I mean, we know that obviously the government spends a great deal, as you mentioned earlier, on subsidies for kind of basic household commodities, such as, you know, salt and gas and so on. But my sense is that, in fact, maybe some of the tensions being felt by the leadership in Turkmenistan at the moment isn't so much because of public unrest, which is very rare, virtually inexistent in Turkmenistan, but because this sort of cushion of large riches flowing into the country has suddenly dried up. And I think that's kind of creating a great crisis of confidence.
Bruce, we have been also talking just before the podcast start, the ban on laborers who are coming from provinces to Ashgabat, and recently we also have seen the cars from provinces are not allowed to the capital. What does that indicate, talking about the ground reality in Turkmenistan today?
You could read that as meaning there's a growing problem with unemployment. In times of rising unemployment, generally people tend to gravitate toward the bigger cities. There aren't that many big cities in Turkmenistan. So I think that they're a little bit worried that unemployed people from around the country will come to Ashgabat in the hopes that they might be able to find work there. You know, and Berdimuhamedov has put a lot of effort into making the city his, you know, the showpiece of his country. The last thing in the world he wants is, you know, people loitering around the street, obviously unemployed, looking for work. So I think that plays a large role in it. There could be a security dimension to it, but I really doubt it. You know, people have mentioned that of course, with Afghanistan next door and the Islamic State, that they're probably a little bit concerned in Turkmenistan, and they should be. But I think this definitely has more to do with just he wants, you know, he's real insistent upon the city being clean all the time. He didn't like the antenna, you know, the satellite dishes on the place. He doesn't like the streets dirty on the streets that he drives to work and comes back from at night and stuff. So I think this was just part of that, is he just doesn't want to have to look at the amount of unemployed people in the country, and he would prefer they stay where they are, even if that means they stay unemployed.
You know, I have a counter argument for that, Bruce, and also to all of you. Yes, we are talking about the economic decline, but on the other hand, the economic decline did not affect on some of the mega projects that are currently underway, like, for example, the sports complex, which is the multi-billion dollar project, and also the Turkmen section of Trans-Afghan pipeline. Although we know that the section beyond Turkmen border is questionable at the moment, and in fact, yesterday, the Berdimuhamedov, the president of Turkmenistan, was in Turkmenbashi inspecting the mega project, the multi-billion dollar project of seaport. How do you understand this contradiction? On one hand, we are talking about the economic decline. On the other hand, these multi-billion dollar projects are going on. Who wants to take this question? Peter, you want to jump in?
Yeah, you know, I think you've absolutely hit the nail on the head. The thing is, when we think about the economy, we generally tend to think about growth of GDP and you know, employment and all of these things. But figures don't, of course, mean anything in Turkmenistan, because there's a national state statistics agency whose data is, you know, kind of worth absolutely nothing. Instead, how is the economy measured in Turkmenistan? I think a really useful way of measuring it is if you look at some comments that the president made during the cabinet meeting on Friday. He told his ministers, look at our city, look at Ashgabat, look how lovely and how much white, he actually said, look how much white marble there is. This shows what a great achievement this country has attained. And this shows what an economic success Turkmenistan has been. And so in Turkmenistan, in the state message is that the white marble, the big projects, the stadiums, the hippodromes, the statues, whatever, all of this stuff is a sign of economic success. The signs of economic failure are not unemployment or you know, drops in productivity. The signs of economic failure are holes in the road, ugly buildings, all of these things that he also likes to talk about a great deal. And so, you know, there's a very kind of superficial analysis of things. I don't honestly know if this is because the president himself is a little bit oblivious. I just don't maybe think he has a very clear understanding of what the situation in his own country is, or maybe, I don't know, maybe he doesn't care. I think subject for conjecture.
Ruslan, I think together with Azatlik, you have been also reporting about the demolition of thousands of houses, plots in suburban Ashgabat. Where does this move falls in this discussion that we are having today, the economic decline, the beautification of Ashgabat? Where does it fit? I mean, this move. Obviously, it angers people, that is for sure. But in terms of the authorities' point of view, where does it fit?
Well, I think the demolition of Choganli Dacha and Shor Dachas are part of the preparations of Ashgabat to host the Asian Games in 2017. And though at this moment there is no construction going on at the on the site of these former villages, but people say, the local analysts say that soon there will be a grand project on individual villas to be constructed. So the move, this move, the demolition of tens of houses is part of the beautification of Ashgabat and part of preparations for the Asian Games. The vast majority of people who lived in Choganli, they moved either to their relatives in Ashgabat, and those who were coming from other regions of Turkmenistan and who lived there, they obviously had to go back to their own regions.
Bruce, on one hand, you have this economic decline, foreign currency crisis, unemployment, people from the provinces not being allowed in the capital, in all these stuff. On the other hand, they are also demolishing thousands of houses in Ashgabat, suburban Ashgabat. How do you read the thinking of authorities? Do they know what they are doing?
Yeah, well, I'm going to have to agree with what Peter was saying a few minutes ago, is I think that for the Turkmen government, it's much more important that they have visible demonstrations of what they consider to be success. And that's supposed to suffice and keep the population satisfied, more or less. You know, if your life isn't great now, at least, you know, look at, we're building all this stuff. We are building up this huge, fantastic state. You can see it because you can, you know, it's true because you can see how the buildings have changed, how the architecture has changed, the monuments have changed. So it's really a big, you know, it's a Potemkin facade at the end. But, you know, they've been passing that off on the population even before Berdi Muhammedov was around. And I think that that's just part of their strategy that's worked for them until now of, you know, just look at all the new things we have here. Don't worry, you'll get your house later, you'll get your whatever later. And you can see that we're moving forward because you can see the new whatever that it is that they've just built.
Right. Let's take a short break here. When we come back, we discuss response by the government to various issues, including repression and raising personality cult of the president recently, and also the way authorities are responding to some of these challenges. Let's take a short break. Welcome back to the Majlis, gentlemen. Today we are discussing declining economy, increasing repression, and rising personality cult in Turkmenistan in its political direction in the light of emerging difficulties. To discuss the subject, I have Peter Leonard, the Central Asia editor at EuroAsianet, Ruslan Matiyev, editor at Alternative Turkmenistan News Portal, Bruce Panier, editor of Kishlak Awazi, Central Asia blog at Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty. I am Mohammed Tahir, director of the Turkmen Service at Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty. Now, Peter, declining economy, increasing repression, and rising personality cult. When I say that, I'm pointing at the recent amendments in the constitution. Is there any connection between these triangles?
I'm not very confident about this. I have to say that I think that the personality cult issue is something that's really been gaining momentum over a number of years, in fact. And so I think to try and explain it away in relation to the economic crisis might be a little simplistic. I mean, the trend we've seen over the time that Berdi Muhammedov has been in power, initially, I think that on some level he sincerely was uncomfortable with the idea that he would be a kind of Niyazov Mark II. And so, you know, he definitely struck this much more kind of modest figure. And I would say that period lasted maybe a couple of years. And for some reason, I think partly because when people tell you from morning until night how wonderful you are and how great you are and what great work you're doing, then of course, you know, some people kind of start to fall for it and start to believe it. So in a way, the changes that he's about to enact, essentially enabling him to run for president as many times as he wants to become president for life, potentially, it seems to me fit into a much broader pattern. I mean, I suppose it is worth making the distinction that unlike Niyazov, he still is willing to, you know, submit to elections, which is not something Niyazov really could be bothered with, I guess. But, and this, I think, in a way speaks to the fact that there's always this slight dichotomy with Berdi Muhammadov. Although a lot of what he does harks back a little bit to the Niyazov era, at the same time, he does talk about things like, you know, diversifying the economy and you know, scrapping subsidies as a way of modernizing the economy and, you know, opening up to the world, sort of. I'd say he's kind of a Niyazov for the 21st century. Such a great thing.
Bruce, then why is suddenly he decided to talk about these amendments in the Constitution, which would, as Peter say, would allow him as long as he wants to remain in the power?
Well, the first thing is his second term is up next year. And I believe constitutionally, I'd have to check that again at the Turkmen Constitution, but I believe they still have a two-term limit, although they've struck so many things from it, I can't quite remember. But anyway, he is supposed to be up for election next year. I suppose it's to legitimize the fact that he's going to be elected to a third term. It's now necessary to do something to the Constitution to show that this is all legal and in keeping with the law of the land. So the idea, at least as we've seen it, is they're going to change the five-year term to the seven-year term. They've done that in Tajikistan, they've done it in Uzbekistan, you know, and it seems to like reset the whole frame. The minute you have a new term length, any of your previous terms suddenly don't count. We know that he's likely to also strike the term limit too, and the age limit for being president at the same time. You know, the most curious thing I think will be to see what happens with the People's Council later, because we know that, although I agree that Niyazov did not like to run for president, he made this very public display of coming out and saying and talking to the People's Assembly or the Parliament and saying, elections are coming, I'm getting to be older, we should hold elections. And then the theater starts where people get up and denounce the idea that, that they would have to have an election. Why should they have to do this? They have the perfect leader already. There's no point in doing this when it's well known that all the people want him to stay on anyway. I'm kind of worried that that's what we're going to see when the Elders' Council gets together later in the year, as Parliament will say yes on the term limit and the Elders' Council will turn around and say, why are we doing this at all? Why can't we just declare you leader for life, which is what they did with Niyazov, and dispense with the need for any elections at all in the future.
Ruslan, we are getting smell of Niyazov era from what we are seeing in terms of constitutional amendments and everything. I also want to turn your attention into something else. Like, as the personality cult is rising in Turkmenistan, we also see rise in tolerance against anyone who potentially might have an objection about what's happening, like criticism. Do you see any connection between these two? I'm talking about especially the reporters that are facing like very difficult days these days, challenging days in Turkmenistan recently.
Well, I see actually connection among all three factors: the economic decline, the repression, and the rise of personality cult. Of course, with the economic decline, with loss of jobs, etc., with the currency mess, it was a real mess. People started to really manifest to display their disagreement with the current policies, and the repression here started to become more sensible, more tangible, let's say, explicitly, because the level of anger among the population has grown. And that's actually another reason why, despite Turkmenistan has its own satellite now, which is supposed to supply internet at very high speed and be very cheap, the internet is getting access to internet is getting worse and worse. Certain websites don't open, certain social media pages, the ones that were still available a few months ago, a few weeks ago even, are now closed. I'm talking about a website called Odnoklassniki, a very popular resource among the Turkmen population.
That is closed?
And yes, it's not available at the moment. It can only be accessed through VPN servers or other online tools to bypass the government filters. And I want to go back to the rise of cult of personality and mention that in 2004 there was a very nice show on an American CBS channel, and this show was and it still exists. It's called 60 Minutes. Bob Simon, correspondent of this show, was invited by Saparmurat Niyazov to Ashgabat, and apparently Niyazov had in mind that he tells the world about how it's good to live in Turkmenistan, that the society enjoys free gas and water and everything. And in that interview, he said one nice thing when Bob Simon asked about his cult of personality. Niyazov said, the Turkmens did not have any, let's say, national hero, a model to follow. This wasn't in the Soviet times. Now we are an independent state. We're building it new. And this model, these people, the ones that are praised today, this model will be followed for centuries, he said. I think the current regime is also trying to build on, to exist, to survive on this model, yes. But of course, it's a new man now in power. It's Berdimuhamedov. And I wouldn't agree with Peter, I think I said this, that, you know, it's just a human nature when you hear all the nice things coming onto you and you feel yourself, you know, as if you have extra powers. You know, Berdimuhamedov has grown politically in this system. He knows precisely how it works. He knows that these long speeches, beautiful words addressed to him by his cabinet or by ordinary people, you know, on the pages of Nitralny Turkmenistan or Turkmenistan newspapers, it's all fake. If he goes away, they will forget about him, just like people are slowly forgetting Saparmurat Niyazov. Yeah? What I want to say is that they try to keep the country on this model, the model that Niyazov invented, or maybe his advisors suggested him, that they need to stick to a hard man ruler, you know, the leader, the serdar, as they say, yeah? Mm-hmm. And only in that direction a country like Turkmenistan can exist and develop.
Right. You know, there was some points, your name was raised, Peter. Unless you have any respond to that, I want to come back, Ruslan, to you. You said that there is a connection between repression, economic decline, and the rising personality cult. My follow-up question to that is, then, while people are facing all these other problems, how it helps for authorities to meet objectives that they are thinking about by raising personality cult?
I mean, if I may, I think that, again, I think maybe we have to just turn the question a little bit on its head, right? Because in the mindset of the, not just the current leadership, but the leadership under Niyazov, it's not that it'll help. I mean, that's just how things are done. You decide things at the top and then everybody has to follow. I mean, I'd say what's kind of interesting in Turkmenistan under Berdimuhamedov was, aside from the, you know, Al-Kadag personality cult, there's also this kind of health cult that's going on. And so the president says everybody must be healthy, so everybody has to be healthy. And because health is such a big thing, they're also really trying to promote the value of sports. And so, you know, I think the thing that they dream of more than anything else now is to get some kind of big sporting prize somewhere. But the fact is, they don't seem to understand that in order to, you know, to win medals, to win prizes, to win competitions, you don't just have a government that says, okay, win a competition. It doesn't work that way. I mean, it has to kind of come from the bottom up. You know, people have to kind of be actively energized of their own will and want to do this. I mean, unless it's kind of, they can institute some kind of East German drug program, but I don't think that option is really open to them. So in a way, I don't think that a personality cult is a solution. It's just the only form of state management that they understand, that they know.
Actually, I just want to take a step away from this one topic, because since we're talking about the environment in Turkmenistan, I thought it was worth mentioning that Berdimuhamedov, whatever he's done with the people, he's terrified the government lately, and it's obvious. I mean, we've seen it's common for officials to be fired. Certainly, there's a constant line of them. They practically rotate through. But there's been a number of officials, including top officials, that have been sacked this year already, and that seems to have put a heightened sense of fear into government officials, and we see that played out in very strange ways. Eurasianet, for instance, just wrote about the decision to implement the rented flats, and they were evicting people all over the place. And we saw it earlier with the cigarette thing in January, too, where Berdimuhamedov makes a comment, speaking to Parliament or the Council of Ministers or something, and people take his comments to an extreme and act upon them. And I think that's based out of this sense of fear, because which we didn't see in the previous years. I think there was a little bit more comfortable feeling to be a member of the government While you always knew that you could be sacked, the situation was not dire. But for some reason, they've been given a message that they need to move now, that things are in flux, and that when the great leader says something, you'd better get on it, like right away, or you might be the next person that's going to get sacked. And that's why we've seen these strange excesses. And it shows me that the government is not in a comfortable position, and they are within their own ranks. There's a real terror about what they need to do to please the big guy.
I would love to hear if Ruslan has some insights on this particular thing, actually, because my hunch, my theory, I may be quite wrong, is that a lot of these cadre rotations happen because actually Berdi Muhammadov often talks about, more than you would expect of such a kind of a radiant kind of state media, he often talks about the problems that we have with harvest, with, you know, the roads, with everything, right? Like, he's always talking about this person has done a bad job, that person has done a bad job. I mean, who's telling him these things? And I kind of get this suspicion, maybe it's completely wrong, that maybe under him are all these kind of people trying to kind of, you know, grab a now kind of smaller pie, and that the best way to get a piece of the pie is to kind of say, well, look at that guy, he's stealing, or he's doing his job badly, and the president goes, oh yeah, he is, let me fire him, and this kind of fighting under the rug is going on. I mean, I wonder if you think, Ruslan, if that's a fair assessment.
Ruslan?
That's partially a fair assessment, indeed. It's indeed the fight underneath the rug, but it could be also much simpler than that. It's basically getting the pie. Yes, you rightly mentioned it. And all of these proclamations about, how the state cares about the people's health by raising the prices on cigarettes, for instance, is wrapped up in a present paper, you know, in the wrapping paper. But in fact, it's just the fight for them. I have credible information, and I'm working on an analysis, a deeper analysis at the moment on this. And this information suggests that one of the relatives of Berdi Muhammadov, namely his brother-in-law, the husband of one of his sisters, has got this market now. And it's a very lucrative market. It's very profitable. You make a lot of money on this. And this fact is also supported by another information that I have, and it is connected to the recent reshuffles in the cabinet and around the closest ones around Berdi Muhammadov, in particular a man called Güçgeldi Hoca Berdiyev, the former chief of his security. He was recently appointed the Minister of National Security, but he was de facto the number one guy, let's say number two guy, yeah, the most powerful, you know, in Turkmenistan. He has now become the Minister of National Security, and the local analysts think that maybe in 2 or 3 months he will be sacked for some reason. In fact, he controlled the cigarette market before. Proven by some documents that I have in possession.
Interesting. Recently, there were lots of other decisions, Ruslan. Cigarette is one of them. Then you also had some stadium is being torn down and rebuilt in the same place with a little bit different design. And you had lots of local shops being shut down recently. I don't know who is getting benefit out of that, or there is anyone who is taking benefit of that. We don't know. But it looks like very much the same picture is being played again. That was Norman Niyazov's period. It looks like that the current president, with all of these problems that is facing at the moment, like economic decline, all these, it looks like the Berdi Muhammadov is out of option. How to take out the country from this situation? I mean,
well, that I don't think he knows. That I'm sure that he probably does not have a very good idea. I think he's just hoping to ride this out. And there's no clearer example of that than the Turkmen currency. Everyone knows they're going to have to devalue that currency, but for whatever reason, he's deciding he's holding on to that rate for as long as possible. And I think he just is hoping that if he waits it out, that it'll all go away sooner or later. But I really don't think there is a plan to get them out of the crisis.
Mm-hmm. Well, one of the solutions.
Very briefly, please. We have to wrap up the discussion here. Very briefly, Peter.
Just very quickly, I would just say, I mean, I think that actually philosophically he is and has spoken about the need to diversify the economy away from dependence on hydrocarbons. So I think this is a very frustrating situation in Turkmenistan, that I think there's actually a great deal of potential in the society, a great deal of potential in the economy, and even a great deal of potential theoretically in this president to exploit that energy. But somehow, you know, there's just something that they just won't allow to happen, whether it's an issue of personalities or the system is just so, you know, set in its ways that it just can't make that kind of quantum leap.
Mm-hmm. Ruslan, final word, please.
Yeah, well, my solution, as the way as I see it, everything is possible to fix if he had enough willingness to hold his family members a little bit back. Because I hope this thinking comes true. Time will show it, of course, somewhere maybe in the summer or in the fall. But that's, according to me, that's the number one issue that brought Turkmenistan to this state as it is, where it is now.
Thank you very much, Ruslan Matif, editor at the Alternative Turkmenistan News Portal. Thank you for your insightful comments. And also big thanks goes to Peter Leonard, the Central Asia editor at EuroAsiaNet, and Bruce Panier, editor of Kishlak Awazi, a Central Asia blog at Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty. Thank you, gentlemen, for being part of the Majlis today.
It was a pleasure. Thank you.
Thank you. And that's it from me.
Thank you.
Mohammed Tahir, director of the Turkmen Service at Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty. Bye-bye.